Hey everybody, welcome to another Hyperspace Broadcast minisode, an episode where instead of discussing something that aired on Toonami, we discuss something kind of Toonami adjacent, or just animated in general. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And this week we discuss the 1981 Canadian film Heavy Metal. It was directed by Gerald Potterton, produced by Ivan Reitman and Leonard Mogul? And based on the magazine Heavy Metal, which basically published comics. It was it started as a licensed translation of a French magazine called Metal Hurlant, which I'm definitely mispronouncing because I don't know French. I'm just a Midwesterner. And, you know, eventually it became its own thing. But it was notable because it had a lot of stories with, like, explicit violence and explicit sex, which at the time was pretty uncommon. By the way, the magazine was first released in 1977.
Yeah, this movie definitely has a lot of violence and boobs, which is, like,
yeah.
Basically the notoriety of the movie that I know going into it.
It should probably be gotten out of the way pretty immediately that this movie is pretty misogynistic. Like, there is there is not a single woman who is not nude within minutes of her introduction.
Yeah, yeah. And that is completely true.
And well, with one exception, and I would not so much call her a woman as a girl because she's a child. Yeah. So that's your one exception to that rule. That's objectionable, certainly. But we can talk about the other things about this movie, I think.
So the movie is like an anthology of various like kind of short stories, similar to how the magazine was, you know, an anthology of various different stories as well. And this one, they kind of all link together by having this evil green orb who...
Yes, the Loch Nahr, the sum of all evil.
Yeah, who in the frame story just appears before this girl and seemingly just is telling her about how completely evil he is.
Yeah,
and don't look away. Look at how evil I am. I'm evil. And basically just like every story is bragging about how Loch Nahr is evil. Even though like some of them really don't have that much to do with Loch Nahr.
Or anything at all. Like there's the one with the aliens who do a bunch of basically space cocaine and then crash their spaceship that has almost nothing to do with the Loch Nahr at all. Yeah.
Yeah. That one's pretty great. There's, you know, and there's it's also of course worth noting that this has like a very metal and all around like rock and roll soundtrack.
Yeah, the soundtrack's great.
Yeah, Blue Oyster Cult, Cheap Trick, Journey, Grand Funk Railroad, Stevie Nicks, Sammy Hagar, all sorts of different
Devo
stuff. Devo.
Yeah, no, the soundtrack's really nice. But yes, it starts essentially with this. Well, it actually begins with a crazy thing where a like space shuttle is flying above Earth presumably and the like doors on the bottom open and then just a like convertible with a guy in a spacesuit falls out and then falls down to Earth, and this is all rotoscoped animation, so it looks kind of weird but also kind of awesome. While there's some serious fucking rock music blasting in the background, the guy lands, drives over to a house, and then greets his daughter, takes out a suitcase that has the Loch Nahr. The Loch Nahr immediately melts him into a puddle of green goo.
Yeah.
And
as we will see, it does to several people.
Yes.
This movie loves melting random people who touch the Loch Nahr.
And this is where the frame story begins. So not to like summarize the whole movie, but basically the first story is about a New York cabbie named Harry Canyon who saves a woman who has the Loch Nahr and is being pursued by a gangster who wants the Loch Nahr for his own nefarious purposes. Of course, she immediately sleeps with Harry Canyon despite the fact that he's just kind of a schlub and then is killed in the end by his like... His taxi cab basically has like a ray gun built into the back seat so he can just kill people who harass him.
She basically betrays him for the money and points a gun at him and he's like, "All right, sorry, babe." And then he like
kills her
and vaporizes her.
So already,
and of course,
we're off to a good start.
The guy gets a hold of the Loch Nahr and also melts.
Yeah. The next story is, I think, possible. Well, it's one of my favorites. Basically, it's the story of this nerdy guy named Dan who finds the Loch Nahr and then gets like transported into another dimension that's basically Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah,
where he's made into this like muscle bound barbarian guy named Den, and basically he is sent on a quest to steal the Loch Nahr. And the notable thing about this is that John Candy voices the internal monologue for Dan and Den, and
yeah,
it's just great because of how inappropriate his voice is for this fucking like ripped barbarian character.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome. It's just like, oh god.
Yeah, and I unfortunately don't recall the name of the guy, but there's like a king who actually sends him on the quest, and he has the best, most deadpan voice. And like, yeah. There's a scene where he's struggling with the evil queen, who of course has sex with Den immediately after meeting him. And this like king guy just says, "It's my Loch Nahr," in about that intense of a voice.
Yeah, come on, it's mine.
During this like intense struggle. So that's pretty funny. Yeah. The third story is the Loch Nahr traveling to a trial being held. There's a man named Captain Stern who has an incredibly like heroic design. Basically looks like Superman. Yeah. But apparently he's an awful criminal who has a huge variety of absolutely heinous charges levered against him.
And so he's like pleading not guilty, but they've got this, he's got like, oh, I paid off this, paid. This is a weird bit. Cause he's like, yeah, oh, I paid off this, witness, and the witness comes in, but the witness like accidentally grabbed the Loch Nahr or just has it in his pocket. And it's like the size of a jujubee or something. And he's, or a gobstopper. And he's like, just talking, and he's like, but he starts like getting these tics, and he's like, oh no, you know what, actually, like, he's like, this guy, he's a wonderful person, he's so amazing, he's a filthy piece of shit.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, it's like, kind as of long as you don't count the times that he sold drugs while dressed as a nun, like,
oh yeah, yeah, or ran a preschool prostitute ring. Yeah, or like, right. It's just the most absurd shit.
Yeah, absurd, and then, like, heinous shit.
Yeah, and then he like, and he starts like transforming, and for some reason becomes like a giant bulking like monster man. Yeah, like he hulks out.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Wow, glad we said that, like, simultaneously. But
which is like, okay, like the Loch Nahr has weird effects on people. I'm surprised this guy didn't get melted.
Yeah, no, so he hulks out and like rampages around, and then it turns out that actually this is what Captain Stern paid him off for, so that he could hulk out and cause a huge distraction so Stern could get away.
Yeah, so he can get away from the trial. So, you know, this piece of shit gets away, and the other guy gets sucked into space and dies.
Yeah, right, because Stern betrays him. So the Loch Nahr, once again, totally evil. Then we have...
I love that one, too, because it's just like, yeah, behold how I messed up this trial. Ooh.
Kind of.
Loch Nahr's weird standards, yeah.
So the next story involves a World War II flying fortress that flies through a bunch of flak fire, and most of the crew is killed before the Loch Nahr zombifies the dead crew, forcing the captain to like bail out, and then he lands on kind of a airplane graveyard where he gets killed by a bunch of other zombies. I think
it's crazy that that guy lived through the crash landing, and then it's like, yeah, but there's also a bunch of zombies on the ground.
Personally, I think this might be my favorite of the segments.
It is really good.
The animation's pretty good. Like, I just, the concept of, like, I wish they'd explored it a bit more, but to me, the concept of a zombie movie that's set entirely on, like, or, you know, a short, really, because you can really make a movie out of it, but the concept of, like, having to fight off zombies on board an airplane is pretty interesting to me.
A cramped old airplane that could easily just go down from a minor thing happening too.
Right.
And like, I really liked the bit where, because like the pilots up front didn't really know what was going on. They knew they were taking fire, but like there's a pilot and co-pilot, and he's like, okay, I guess I have to go check behind and see if people died.
Yeah,
and like everyone in the back is, Yeah, and everyone in the back is dead from all just being shot by Flak, and it's just like, oh shit. Like, I really love that, like, slow sneaking moment where he's like, he's kind of like making his way through the back of the plane,
to see everybody
assessing.
Like, just slaughtered. Yeah, it's
it's
a very atmospheric short. That's
it, really. Yeah,
pretty fun. So the next one is the goofy one where some aliens accidentally abduct a secretary who, of course, immediately has sex with a robot. And then as the aforementioned space cocaine is snorted by the aliens and they crash their ship in a space station. Now, what does Lochnar have to do with this? Nothing. Lochnar is not present. I believe it's implied that the Lochnar is the secretary's necklace, like, jewel, but I, you know, whatever. Like,
sometimes I bang around and go through space getting high.
Yeah. Oh, so evil. And then we have the kind of, like, final and I think the longest segment. Which is this, like, basically the Lochnar kills a bunch of people and turns them into, like, crazy mutants who then start destroying a city to the tune of The Mob Rules. The rulers of the city, like, somehow summon this, like, last warrior from a warrior race that was supposed to defend them named Tarna. And the rest of this is Tarna trying to, you know, get revenge for the people who got killed.
Because they're all, like, hidden in a cloister in the city, in the middle of the city that's being raided. And they're like, oh, God, we have to call Tarna. Like, she'll come in and save us. And they call her, you know, using some spell or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then we get, like, the slowest scene of Tarna just, like, getting on her mount, flying over to this place, getting off, taking off all of her clothes because, of course.
Yeah, right. And of course. Very, very, very slow.
Super slowly putting on her battle armor, which is just like a G-string.
Yeah, because her battle armor, which movie. Is super fetishistic. And we have these incredibly also fetishistic, like, slow shots of her putting on all of this armor. And of course, by the time she gets there, they're all fucking dead.
Right.
Like,
she's like, shit.
Yeah, I don't know. Took too much time flying through, like, actually quite impressive follow shots of her, like, flying
this
through
canyons really cool.
and stuff. I think, like, not to get ahead of myself, but I think the background design in this movie in general is its real strength. Like, all the backgrounds have a really nice style and, like, level of detail.
For sure. Especially in this segment.
Yeah, even though it's worth mentioning, and we didn't before, all of these, or most of these segments were animated by different studios.
Yeah.
Which you can kind of tell. It's not a totally consistent, like, style, but I mean, I think it works. Like, you know, it's getting into the anthology thing, obviously, but then also, like, the magazine itself had comics from different authors, so there was stylistic differences there too. Anyway,
and I like this bit too. You know, despite the excessive stupidity of parts of it, of, like, you know, boobs, but, you know, I think it's pretty cool watching this warrior go across and across this land, and, like, all the landscapes look nice. And then she goes and kind of kicks ass and, you know, destroys the Lochnar, like, by sacrificing herself.
It's also worth mentioning she goes and kicks ass, but not before she's captured by the bad guys, stripped naked and tied up to be whipped.
Because, of course,
you know, that also has to be in there. She kills the king by, like, shoving his own, you know, like, buzzsaw hand into his body with the most
crazy.
like that scene. This is a pretty good segment. The fight scenes are weirdly slow in a way that's weird. I guess I don't know how else to put it, but the sound of the buzzsaw cutting into this guy's chest is the most, like, visceral, gross sound of it slowly, like, slowing down. It's like, that sound effect is great. Also, there's a lot of sound effects, actually. I have in my notes here that there's a scene where Tarna goes to, like, a bar and fights a bunch of mutants and just decapitates them.
Just
and
like, yeah.
The sound of them being decapitated is basically the sound of someone stepping in Jell-O. Like, it's just yeah. the most, like, kind of sound. It's ridiculous.
The, And so at the end of this, she sacrifices herself and destroys Lochnar, and then we go back to the frame story, and Lochnar starts blowing up.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I feel like this didn't make sense to me the first time I watched this movie, but this time around, I was like, okay, the Lochnar exists, like, out of time. So,
yeah,
it's destroyed in this timeline, and so it's dying now. Like,
and then, you know, the young girl runs off, the house explodes as Lochnar dies.
The house
and then,
explodes,
like,
and it's like a shot of a model exploding, yeah. which is weird, but kind of awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool how they did that. And she notices Tarna's reborn mount, this cool, like, flying kind of chocobo thing. And, you know, she gets on it and happily flies away, and it's revealed that, you know, Tarna's soul is reincarnated, and she's the new Tarna.
Something. Yeah, basically.
And she's going to destroy the next evil that comes in, I guess, the sequel, Heavy
yeah,
Metal
right.
2000.
And presumably take off her clothes at some point. So... Yeah, I think I should, I need to mention that the first time I watched this movie actually was in college, and it was a pretty weird circumstance where I was going to visit a friend of mine that went to a different college and ended up hanging out with him and a friend that he'd met, and we were just kind of like scrolling through Netflix or whatever, saw this movie, and we're like, why not? Let's watch this. So we watched it, and we're like, this is fucking crazy. Like, what is this movie? This is nuts.
Yeah.
And then immediately afterwards watched a movie that in retrospect fit perfectly, which is a movie about a guy whose dick is alive and it comes off his body and kills people. And
wow.
You know what? Like, kind of appropriate now that I think about it.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that was live action, by the way.
Great.
Yeah, and the dick was stop motion animated. It was a real weird movie. I don't remember the name of it, and I'm not going to bother trying to find it because I really don't need to see it again. But,
yeah,
you know, as an 18-year-old idiot, I was like, this is pretty funny.
Yeah, right. Sometimes you have to have those like movies like Machine Girl or...
Oh, God, Machine Girl.
Just ridiculous, stupid shit.
I think
just...
that was like one of the first times that we actually hung out was watching that movie.
God, that fucking movie.
Anyway, so yeah, that's Heavy Metal. I think it's all right. I like it all right.
Yeah,
I have some problems with it, obviously.
Yeah, you know, there's definitely dated aspects to it, or even not even quite dated so much as just sexist and stupid.
Yeah,
like
right.
It's clearly written as like a, you know, it's like written by hetero male, like horny dudes, and written for hetero male horny
and,
dudes,
and
I guess.
Animated by presumably
oh, for sure.
Horny dudes. But if you
and
can
it's just,
put that aside.
So exaggerated, but besides that, you can definitely value it for like, there's a lot of like really neat, like background art, a lot of neat art in general in the thing, and the stories are fun in general. You know, it's, you got to learn to take the good with the bad, you know?
Especially yeah, sometimes.
In these days, guys.
I think that it's definitely a movie that, yeah, it's up to individual taste, really. That's what it comes down to. It's not for everyone, certainly. And it's also like, it's got some good bits. It's got some terrible bits. I'm not really sure how to think about it, to be perfectly honest. I'm probably not going to watch it again. Like, I think twice was enough for me. But, you know, there's some cool stuff in it.
Yeah.
And that said, we're going to be moving on to something completely different. Maybe? I don't know, actually. Who knows? I have no idea what
yeah.
Star Blazers is going to be like.
Yeah, Star Blazers, one of the earliest... adaptations of an anime over to the US Space Battleship Yamato, very famous.
Yeah, like a Japanese super anime. Classic anime. And
localized as Star Blazers.
Yeah, so we're getting back. You know, it's been a while since we watched something that got, like, totally butchered.
Or, people have a fondness for Star Blazers, well, though. Yeah, I don't know if it's that bad.
No, let's be fair. By butchered, I just mean totally, like, changed and altered in weird ways. So I'm hoping for some of that Robotech magic.
A
little bit, at least. But preferably Robotech magic and not, like, G-Force magic.
Are you ready for a character named Derek Wildstar? Because I sure am.
Yes. We should go watch this right now, because Derek Wildstar is my favorite character name from now on.
Hell yeah.
Just call me Michael Wildstar.
Wildstar. What a fucking fantastic.
Yeah, no, that's so good. All right. Yeah. Well, we're going to get to that, but we'll be covering that next week. Until then, I'm Michael Doak.
And I'm Peter Eby.
And next week, Star Blazers, featuring Derek Wildstar.